The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
But first today, on Friday's programme, Luke O'Neill, Professor of Biochemistry at Trinity College in Dublin, brought us news of an intriguing correlation between lower rates of COVID-19 infection associated with inoculation with the BCG vaccine. He mentioned a colleague in the Netherlands who's working in this very space. Well, Luke is back with us this morning. Luke, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How's it going?
Very well. Now, I was at home listening to this conversation between you and Mark, and straight away my antennae started to quiver because this seemed like a fascinating and potentially life-saving piece of information. Will you remind us where it came from?
I will indeed, Pat. Well, you see, there was a great science behind BCG going back quite a while that it would protect against other diseases, like, for example, measles and malaria even, and certain respiratory diseases. So that was out there scientifically. And of course, Mihai, who's joining us, is an expert on that. And then this correlation thing came out, and that intrigued all of us who are obsessed with BCG, which includes me, by the way. We saw these two papers, actually, and as you mentioned, we'll have a discussion about them. There was this correlation between use of BCG and seemed to be in countries which used a lot of it over the years, had less deaths from COVID-19. Now, the issue, of course, is the correlation. So we've got to be very careful because there could be all kinds of confounding variables. But given that there was a great science behind BCG, it got all our attention, basically, last week.
Now, we will be talking to Paul Hegarty, a consultant urologist at the Mater Hospital in Dublin, who actually worked on this study as well. But just to go back to BCG, I was reading up about this. Bacillus Calmette-Guérin, where did that come from originally? I mean, where was the idea that somehow people could be protected from tuberculosis?
Sure. Well, if you're an immunologist, you're obsessed with BCG. We all are, by the way, because it's a fascination. It was originally the TB vaccine, brought to Ireland, by the way, in the late 40s by a woman called Dorothy Stopford Price, who deserves huge credit. She saved a lot of kids' lives from TB by bringing this vaccine in. But then scientists began to notice that it protected against other diseases. It wasn't just TB. And there seemed to be a protection against measles, for instance, and malaria. And that was intriguing. Why would one vaccine for one infection protect against others, you know? And it turns out it boosts kind of a barrier response in your immune system. It's called innate immunity. And that gets boosted by BCG. So any infection then gets, not any, but the ones that have been examined, gets repelled by this barrier. So suddenly there was this interest. And it goes back a few years, by the way, that this has been going on, you know? And that's provoked trials in other diseases. And now the great news is there's loads of trials running with BCG for COVID-19. And it's great having Mihai on the line, actually, because he's a frontline guy. He's running some of these trials. So we're going to discuss what it's like to run trials, I guess, with BCG. So suddenly everybody's wondering, might this work,
I guess? Mihai is there. Mihai Nadea, good morning. We don't have Mihai yet. We don't have him there. We'll talk to him in a moment. Luke, what is the story about the link between milkmaids and tuberculosis? There was some story, whether it's folklore or not, a bit like the discovery of penicillin, that they noticed that milkmaids didn't get tuberculosis. And I think the theory was that they got TB from the cows they were milking, and this gave them some immunity against human TB.
Yeah, that's right. Milkmaids, strangely, Pat, milkmaids have been a big focus for immunologists, unusual as it may seem, because that's exactly right. They could pick up bovine TB, and that might protect them against real TB. And secondly, of course, they picked up cowpox, and that protected them against smallpox. And that was the start of vaccination. The first ever vaccine was actually cowpox, which protects against smallpox. So that kind of idea of one thing protecting against another was kind of out there for quite a while, you know. And then BCG is sort of joining that, I guess, as a kind of a concept, you know.
Now, the fascination by this, I mean, as soon as I heard, as I say, my antennae started to quiver, and I thought this could be very significant. How many countries have ongoing programs of BCG? When you mentioned we started in the 40s, when did we stop or have we stopped?
Yeah, in 2015 in Ireland, we stopped vaccinating routinely. You know, now some kids did get it after that, by the way. But in general terms, the policy of vaccinating against TB went because there was good evidence you didn't need to, strangely, Pat. You know, and in other words, TB can be a disease of poverty, more susceptible if in poorer countries. That's why, by the way, the developing world still uses BCG aggressively, you see. I'm talking like India and Africa. They vaccinate widely, and so does Brazil, you know. And that's what was noticed in those countries. There seemed to be a lower incidence of death from COVID-19. Now, as I say, there could be other reasons. It could be a younger population. Who knows? You know, there could be other confounding factors in this. But even still, those developing world countries vaccinate aggressively, and lo and behold, they seem to have a lower incidence of COVID-19.
Well, Dr. Mihai Nadea is there now. Mihai, good morning and welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Now, you were working on the BCG vaccine. Indeed, when I looked at the paper that was published, it actually quotes the fact that you've been working on BCG for quite some time. What do you make of this statistical correlation?
Well, this is very interesting and it's raising interest, of course, but it is tough to say at this moment of the pandemics. Various countries are in different moments of the curve. Some of them are behind other countries. Some of them are more advanced. That is one thing. Other countries have also different ways in which they recruit patients, they test them, they report the cases of COVID-19. There are also, of course, differences in the demographics. There are differences in the healthcare system. So there are many, many confounding factors that can have influenced this effect. That being said, there are two aspects that I want to emphasize. First of all, we need to wait a little bit longer through the epidemics towards the end of the year, and then we can see whether these correlations hold true. Secondly, of course, there seems to be a signal, and of course, randomized clinical trials based also on this epidemiological and correlation data should be organized to get a response quicker and more reliable.
Now, you have been looking at the science of the BCG methodology. What is it about the BCG vaccine that conveys immunity to other things or reduces the susceptibility to infection of not just tuberculosis, but other things? Is there a component of that vaccine which is active?
Yes, what it has been observed, and we have looked at BCG from the immunological point of view, there are peptidoglycans in the structure of the cell wall of the BCG and of the mycobacteria that induces a reprogramming of the precursors of immune cells in the bone marrow of the individuals who get the vaccine. As a result of that, the bone marrow produces cells and releases cells which are better able to respond to different type of pathogen. This is not a specific response that is only against tuberculosis, but these cells which are released from the bone marrow of these individuals who have been vaccinated with BCG are better able to respond to various types of viruses, bacteria, fungi, and so on. So the science behind that is at the level of the DNA of the bone marrow precursors of immune cells.
Now, do we know how long this effect will last? I mean, I'm sure I got my BCG as a very young child. So I'm wondering at this stage, does it still afford me that protection?
Well, the majority of the epidemiological studies have shown that the strongest effect on non-specific level on other types of infections are in the first 3 years after the BCG vaccination. We don't know exactly how these effects turn out later on during life, but the data are much more difficult to obtain because the effects are smaller. Because of these epidemiological studies, we hypothesize that the effects of BCG on other types of infections, so that includes also the new coronavirus, would be relatively short, the strongest for the first 2 or 3 years. That being said, of course, a new infection and we do not know for sure. And the epidemiological data might suggest, and these new correlations that have been published last year, might suggest a long-term effect, but the studies need to be continued to get that answer. But immunologically speaking, we hypothesize the effect is relatively short-lived for 2 or 3 years, and BCG can give a protection to bridge the immune responses to be increased until we develop a proper specific vaccine against the new coronavirus. So I think that BCG is most likely to be a very important tool to bridge the period before the occurrence of the disease till a specific vaccine is developed.
Now, you are running trials yourself. On what sort of candidates?
So at this moment, we are running clinical trials in populations at risk, and we have chosen two populations at risk, which we believe are very important. One of them are the hospital personnel, doctors and nurses who are in the first line in the fight against the virus. So we believe that it is very important that they stay healthy, and we try to protect them so they can take care of the other patients. That is one group of individuals at risk that are being studied in clinical trials in the Netherlands and in Australia at this moment. And such studies are prepared also in the US, in Germany and Denmark and South Africa. At the same time, we have chosen a second population of risk, which are the elderly individuals. Two studies, as far as I know, are running or are about to start in elderly individuals. One has been started by us together with the colleagues at the University of Athens, Professor Evangelos Giamarellos. We have a study in elderly individuals who have been vaccinated actually last year, because we wanted to study this for the usual infections, for influenza and so on. So by a twist of fate, we have vaccinated two groups of elderly individuals last year to protect them against influenza and other types of respiratory tract infections. And we are following them now also for COVID-19. And a second trial will be shortly starting in the Netherlands in the elderly individuals.
Now, how long before you have results of the trial?
I think that, of course, this depends a lot of how the epidemic evolves and how strong the BCG effects will be. But we think that probably we will need approximately 3 to 6 months to have the first data.
All right. So, you know, there may well be a vaccine that will become available early next year. The question is, should we invoke the precautionary principle and give the vaccination of BCG to those on the front line and those who are most vulnerable, the elderly and those who already have underlying illnesses? Should we do it now, given that we know it does not cause harm?
Well, I think that we should not do it now yet for two reasons. First of all, there is a very small chance that some side effects would happen. We have not seen it in any of our studies. Also in the studies ongoing now, we have not seen side effects. But this is a new infection, so you never know for sure, 100%. So that is also a caution, let's say. The second and the more important reason not to start now is because the world is not yet prepared with enough BCG vaccine. The BCG vaccine is now given in young children and in population at risk who need it against tuberculosis. If everybody would start now to vaccinate the healthcare personnel and the elderly, there will be not enough BCG in the first phase. So we should not take that from the people we know for sure that they would benefit from it. So I think that the best thing is to wait for 3, 4, 5 months until we have the results. If the results are positive, at that moment, immediately we have to take to be in discussion with the authorities, with the vaccine producer and so on, to increase very quickly the production of the BCG, and at that time to start to vaccinate as many people as possible, once again, if the effects are positive. And in this way, to bridge the period until the specific anti-coronavirus vaccine would be hopefully available sometime next year.
Well, it's fascinating stuff, Dr. Mihai Netea. Thank you very much for joining us from the Netherlands. Luke O'Neill is still on the line, but we're also joined by Dr. Paul Hegarty, consultant urologist who was involved in this study. Paul, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on, Pat.
Now, you're a consultant urologist, and it turns out that you have a different use for the BCG vaccine routinely anyway.
Yeah, it's sort of strange to see a urologist involved in immunology, but urologists have been using BCG to instill into patients' bladders to reduce the risk of bladder cancer coming back or progressing, and we use this in our daily practice and are very familiar with its use.
So you got involved in the study, and I read the abstract of your paper, and it's actually quite compelling. Now, we know about the confounding factors that were mentioned by Luke and by Mihai already, but even taking those on board, the statistics suggest that perhaps there's a tenfold less risk for those who've got BCG vaccination programs as against those who don't.
That's right. When we looked at the actual incidence, the incidence dropped from 358 per million down to 38 per million if you had came from a country that had a program of vaccination. And the death rate reduced from 40 per million down to 4.2 per million in this crude data. And to correct for that,
it is crude data, and you have all the caveats and so on, but it is at the same time persuasive and compelling, admittedly with the caveats.
Yeah, it is indeed. And we did a further sub-analysis looking at neighbouring countries that have BCG or don't have BCG, and we looked at them versus their GDP and their overall health, and the fatality rate was about three times less in the countries that had BCG, even when we corrected for other health indicators.
I mean, the one that jumped out at me was that in Portugal, at the time of writing, they had 209 deaths, where they have a national program of BCG vaccination. In Spain, where they do not, 10,930. Now, there's a different population, of course, but even bearing the difference in population between Spain and Portugal in mind, the death rate in Portugal is much, much lower.
It is very striking. And we also corrected for the time on the development of the disease within each country. So we waited for 100 cases to be reported in each country and called that week zero, and then tracked them over the weeks thereafter. And it seems to hold up that the countries with BCG programs have an apparent reduced risk of getting it and of dying of it.
Now, one of the worries, I suppose, if this is proven to be protective, you yourself were noting that there was a shortage of BCG vaccine for your work in cancer prevention. So if, you know, which is a relatively narrow area of activity, I suppose. So therefore, if there was to be a protective inoculation of vulnerable populations, be they the aged or those who have underlying illnesses, the BCG vaccination would not be available.
Yeah, it's definitely a worry. It's been a worry for urologists for years. But there are a number of sources of BCG. And so really, it'll depend on what gets licensed for its use. This is going to highlight that industry needs to work with academia to maximize it. And we also have been stewards of controlling how much BCG is being used with limited resources, and there is a possibility of repurposing what we use for bladder cancer. If there is surplus, that we can use that also for the next phase.
All right. Well, look, Kevin, thank you very much Paul Hegarty, who's consultant urologist at the Mater Hospital in Dublin and who was part of that study. So going back to Luke O'Neill, Luke, a number of studies referred to by Mihai going on around the world, all of them with the common purpose.
That's right, Pat. And the one in Australia is worth highlighting, the Murdoch Children's Research Institute in Australia. They've got 4,000 people on the trial, and it's been endorsed by the World Health Organization. So everybody seems to be getting behind this, which is great. Two other things, Pat. As Mihai said, it's a bridge to a vaccine, remember. If Mihai's trial works, he'll know in 3 to 6 months, okay? It could then be available a good year ahead of the vaccine, you see, the real vaccine, which comes along next, you know? So it gives us this extra sort of approach here to protect people. That's the good part of that. And then for Paul, it's a fascination. This will galvanize BCG production, which will help Paul in his cancer efforts anyway, because it's been a big issue for the likes of Paul's specialty to get enough BCG to treat cancer. So there are two outcomes that I think we should emphasize. Now, of course, as Mihai said, we got to wait for the trial. Very important. The classic double-blind placebo trial to see if it's going to work or not, but it's going to be quick. If we're optimistic, we'll have the results within 3 months, you see. So there's huge optimism around this one.
I suppose people are clutching at the straw that maybe, since we know it to be by and large harmless, because all of us have had it up to 2015 in Ireland anyway, and people were not dropping like flies from the BCG vaccine, that there could be a prophylactic administration of BCG again to vulnerable groups, which might keep our ICUs freed up.
Absolutely. I have no doubt, Pat. There's at least seven trials running as we speak, including the two that Mihai is involved in, you know, and it's very safe because it's been in millions and millions of people, you see. If those trials give a signal, this gives us another option, which is tremendous, I think. And of course, very importantly, Pat, tell people we must keep social distancing and washing your hands. Anybody who has had the vaccine, don't think you're protected. Keep that until the scientists prove it. Make sure you keep doing the usual things. It's really important.
All right, Luke O'Neill, a professor of biochemistry at Trinity College in Dublin, thank you very much for joining us. And before that, thanks to Mihai and to Paul.